Hi, this is Vic Mignogna, Captain Kirk from Star Trek Continues, and guess what? You're listening to the Shuttle Pod.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the Shuttle Pod. This is episode 31. I'm Brian and I'm here alone with Kayla and Jared.
Hey guys.
Hey everybody.
We are recording this on February 2nd, 2 days after the first trailer for Discovery dropped online, and we have a lot to say about this, so we're going to get right into it. First, let's give our initial reactions to it, and then we can get into the nitty-gritty of it. So what was your visceral reaction to seeing this trailer for the first time?
Okay, the thing I appreciate the most, and I'll jump in on that, is the sense of commitment that I get from this. I mean, everything mm-hmm. looks like they're really putting a lot of effort into it, that they want to make everything look as pretty as possible, that they're taking their time, that they want to get it right, and that they're just serious with this. I mean, I've been, and I don't want to say pessimistic, but I've just been skeptical about a lot of Discovery news where my reaction is, I'll believe it when I see it, right? And I'm mm-hmm. starting to see it, so I'm starting to believe it.
Yeah, I think for me, it was just, there was a lot of excitement in seeing this because I think I have been, and I'm not alone in this, I don't think, I've been angling for just any kind of real news beyond. I mean, casting announcements are great, don't get me wrong. But seeing pictures of what we're going to be seeing on television and video of that. And this video, this promo video they put together is fantastic. It's emotional. It, harks back to the very early days of Star Trek and kind of acknowledges the history of Trek. So seeing this was just like, it was more than a breath of fresh air. It was like this shot in the arm, of excitement. I think it really helped build up the excitement for me.
Yep. I completely agree with both of you. I had a mixture of relief and excitement. It feels like you said, they got the tone right. It feels right. It just stoked the flames for me completely. I was very excited by it. And I think a lot of people were very excited about it too. I mean, everything's going to have a critic, especially on the internet. But I think most of the reaction to it has been pretty positive.
There was a great comment. One of the early comments on this on the story on TrekMovie.com was someone saying, "Oh, I can just anticipate what all of the negative comments are going to be," and he listed all of the classic things that people have been complaining about. I'll never pay to buy right. to first CBS All Access to watch one show, or oh, it's a prequel, and so I hate it, and I'll never watch it. And it's like, I'm with this commenter. I'm so sick of hearing this, because it's like the majority of the people that are saying this are the kind of people who have, the Star Trek room in their house filled top to bottom with memorabilia, and they won't pay $6 a month to watch actual Star Trek. Like, I don't
buy it. I know. Well put. It's going to be 13 episodes, so that means you're going to have to basically have the thing for a little over 3 months. So it'll cost you, what, about $18, $19
total? For an entire season of Star Trek, which is what we are here for.
Which we haven't
That's assuming
had
you don't use
years.
It for anything else but Star Trek.
Right.
Yeah. Since there's plenty more on the service itself. Mm-hmm. So I'm not sympathetic. I'm sympathetic to people, and there are a few people who have mentioned this in the comments. I am sympathetic to people who live in remote areas are going to have a hard time getting access to it. That I appreciate, because there are people that do not simply have good internet access in the United States. Mm. I mean, those people, I can understand them complaining, but the average person, sorry.
I would imagine they would have a hard time getting any television show then, if that were the case, because everything's digital now and you have to have a digital antenna.
Yeah, well, one in particular commenter, I think, lives up in the mountains or something like that. So I don't really know how he gets his internet access. But there are people like that, to be fair. But I would say he has a complaint, but I would think that most people should be able to rub $6 together. And,
right.
It's a pretty reasonable price point.
Yeah, it is.
As I've mentioned before, if you go to Starbucks on a regular basis, that's basically almost the price of a cup of Starbucks coffee.
Yeah, it's a cup of coffee. Yeah.
Yeah. So, anywho, should we get into the nitty-gritty of this a little bit?
Let's nitty and gritty it.
All right, so one of the first images, one of the first new images, I should say, in this thing, looks like what appears to be Klingon costumes. They're very, I guess, sharp. They have sharp edges to them.
Yeah, and they're like,
I don't even know how to...
Plates of metal with spikes on them. So it's very, it almost looks like metal that's made out of bone.
Yeah, like yeah. Kind of like like a dinosaur too.
Yeah, it's very much evoking right. Like wearing bones, the armor made of bones, but it looks metallic.
Yeah, it looks Klingonish.
It does. And we know that the Klingons are going to play a huge role in Discovery. So I don't think it's crazy to think that these could be the Klingon uniforms.
Right. And I do like the fact that they're finally giving the Klingons some new outfits. I mean, the Klingons in a lot of the spinoffs from TNG on were all wearing those uniforms from the motion picture. They just kept reusing them over and over and over again. So it'd be really cool to see them get some fresh duds to walk around in.
Yeah, you know, I think I do agree. I think that I'm looking, like, you know, speaking generally about Discovery, I'm looking forward to all these new things with new looks and stuff. But then it makes me wonder why they picked the timeline they did. Because it's really right in the middle of two shows, right next to the TOS era, which we know very, very well, which doesn't have a look that translates to modern times. Right. So,
and not only,
yeah,
I'm sorry.
No, just to, you know, continue saying, how are they gonna keep canon while still upgrading everything? I mean, it just seems like it would have been so much easier to set this in pretty much any other timeline.
Yeah,
yeah. Unless the idea is, you know, we're worried about the actual story canon, but we're not going to worry about visual style.
Sure.
Which I'm okay with.
Yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah, too. I think I am too. Look, but it is a little jarring, I have to admit.
It is. Look, guys, you guys both know how much I love the original series and all that other stuff. But, I mean, you can't put the Cage era production design on television. You simply can't do it. Unless you're doing it for a lark for like one episode, like on, you know, Deep Space Nine or something.
Sure, yeah.
You can't do it. And not only was that... is it dated? It's more dated than TOS. Like, the Cage production design is like got a very late 50s vibe to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's really dated. It makes TOS look modern. Like, it's just, yeah. You know.
It does.
Yeah, I think one time I compared those like away team jackets that they have on.
Mm-hmm, the field jackets.
They look like, yeah, they look like they were made from like used U.S. Navy blankets from World War II.
Which they probably were.
They probably were.
They probably were. Although I did like the idea of them having field jackets, because, you know, it seems like on every Star Trek show, every planet they beam down to is like, you know, Southern California.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, also sometimes you need pockets, right? And those uniforms don't really have pockets.
Well, in TOS, you just pull stuff out of your butt. You just magically have Velcro on your pants when you need it. And somehow your phaser has Velcro on it, too. But only when you need it.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's so true. Anyway, we kind of went off on a tangent there. Do we like the new costumes?
Yeah, what
do we
think? They look pretty good. The question is...
they look pretty cool.
I also think they're... they kind of feel like they look a little bit like the Star Trek Beyond outfits, like those, that jacket that Christopher Pine has on with the blue and gold.
Oh, the Federation one? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, a little bit.
This is one of the key things in the video, right? Is that we get one shot of a Starfleet uniform.
Yep.
Which does very much, Jared, invoke the field jackets from Beyond. And I think someone, it might have been Aaron Harvey, who does art for our site and sometimes writes for our site, who mentioned specifically how it looks similar to the field jackets, and then was showed a picture of the field jackets from the Cage. So it could be something like that. It could be a dress uniform, or it could be the regular uniform.
It could be. It kind of had a dress uniform vibe to it.
Yeah, with the collar.
By the collar. The collar, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, what little we saw of it looked fine. You know. The real headline, though, with that whole thing is the Delta on the uniform.
Mm-hmm. The insignia.
The new Starfleet Delta. And, the insignia.
And I think it's really important to point out the possible, or possibly not, issues with canon here for the use of the Delta symbol on a non-Enterprise vessel uniform.
Ship, yeah. Right.
Oh, interesting.
Go for it.
So I was schooled on this by you guys and by Matt, who is another editor on the site, who I thought that the delta in TOS era, the delta shape was only supposed to be used for the Enterprise crew. And I think it seems to be a common misconception among fans that that's how it's supposed to be. But apparently there's a memo. Remind me about this memo, Brian, if you remember.
Bob Justman wrote it to Bill Tice.
Okay. So
Star Trek's costume designer.
So Bob Justman wrote this memo to the costume designer saying that the Delta insignia was supposed to be used for all starships, I guess, or at least all starships of that type. Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, and so it was intended that the Delta symbol would be used for all people on starships. So people on Starbase and other things like that would get different insignia. But then I guess the costume designer just said, I don't like that. I'm going to do my own thing. And
right.
So we saw several instances where people of, you know, other ships would have different symbols on their chest. But in several episodes of Star Trek, the original series, you see people from other ships that we know are from other ships wearing the Enterprise Delta. So it seems like both are true, kind of. If you just take what's on screen to be canon.
Right.
We know that at very least we know that the Delta was used for more than just the crew of the Enterprise.
Right.
So this does not break canon in that way.
Well, that's
some. And then when the movies came along, it is. And then when the movies came along, obviously all of Starfleet just had the Delta.
Right. But I thought, and I think a lot of fans think, that when the movies came along, like the timeline is that the Federation sort of normalized that logo and just applied it to everyone. But that before that, it was Enterprise only. Apparently not true.
Yeah, but yeah, I think that was fanon. That's like total fanon. Like, I don't think that was ever established officially. I think that's just something the fans came up with to fill in like the discrepancy, I guess.
It's amazing, though, because I was so sure that that was the case until Matt totally schooled me on that one.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. I had no idea. I always assumed that was intentional.
So that's a teachable moment.
Indeed it is. So what do we think about this new insignia? It's, you know, it's gold. It's got, like, you know, it's definitely got a certain original series cage era feel to it. And it's got like it's got actual rank pips on it,
yeah,
which is a departure from any other Starfleet Delta we've seen
before.
Which
is cool, I guess, but like you're not going to be able to see that on screen.
Yeah,
that's
true. I didn't even think of that. You're right.
Like on the original series when they had the little bands on your wrists, those were really stripes, easy to see.
Yeah. Yeah, or even in some of the alternate universe ones where they have, or like the future, like the Voyager episodes with the future insignia, they have bands behind the Delta. And the number of bands has to do with your rank. And those are obvious as well, but the pip is the same color as the Delta and it's just sitting on top. So it's kind of hard to see.
Good point. But overall, what do we think of it? Do we like it? I like it.
I love it. I like that they got the glossy half on the right and then the sort of brushed metal on the left.
That part's cool.
It is cool. And they've got the operations insignia within the Delta, which is very original series looking type of thing. So it's one, might as well touch on this now. I'm wondering if they are going to try to hold on to elements of the production design from that era to give it kind of a slightly retro look while bringing it into the 21st century.
Like do you think having the symbols on the insignia is a retro type of thing, or?
Well, it does suggest that they're going to, by keeping that operation symbol on the insignia, it kind of suggests that they're definitely going to try to stay within that vernacular somehow.
I think they should.
Visually. Yeah, I think we all think they should to some degree. So maybe they're going to change things, but almost make them an echo of what we once knew so that it doesn't look so incongruous with what comes afterwards.
I think that's that's ideal if they can pull that off.
Yeah, I mean, that's what Herman Zimmerman kind of tried to do when he built Enterprise, and I thought he did a pretty good job trying to get it to integrate.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. I think the blue here has also tended to be a little bit reminiscent of the blue service uniforms from Enterprise. So I feel like it's kind of bridging that gap as well.
It is that same color. Could very well
be. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, this is fun. I love doing this stuff. When was the last time we were able to dig in like this? This is good.
10 plus years.
Yeah. I'm not used to this anymore, guys.
Yeah, imagine that.
It's been way too long.
Yeah.
But anyway, so thumbs up on the new Delta. We like the new Delta. You know, we like what we've seen in the uniform, what little we have. Let's see. What can we move on to?
Do you want to talk about the ship?
Yes, let's talk about the ship. What do you think of the ship, Jared?
I think it reminds me of the NX class with the where we in the originals in the A, B, C, D, and E, we have the saucer section, and then we have the main drive section, and then we have the warp nacelles. And for this, there's no main drive section. It's just the nacelles and the saucer section, like the NX. So I guess there's a drive section, it's just not as pronounced.
And are you talking about the schematic of the ship that we
see? Oh, yeah. Or is that's not the Discovery. That's a different one.
Yeah.
That's a different ship, which we will get into also. But we can talk about it now since you brought it up.
Sure.
That is actually, I think a lot of us were speculating that it was like an NX variant or...
Yeah, I've even written in the caption here, perhaps an evolution of the NX class.
Right, and I thought maybe it was an early version of the Miranda class, which was the Reliant. I thought maybe it was that or something like that, but it's not either of those things. It's apparently a design that John Eves made like around 2008, 2009. I think for a game, maybe. I'm not quite sure.
Oh, wow.
But that design has been floating around for a while.
That's amazing.
And
I just
John
see this,
apparently...
Yeah.
Yeah, John apparently recycled it for the show. Because John Eves is obviously doing ship design for this show. So he took one of his old, I guess an old favorite of his, and bought it back.
It's the USS Mawson.
Right, something like that. I forget where it completely comes from originally, what he designed it for.
Mm-hmm. It's a cool looking ship.
It might have been a game, but it doesn't look right for the period.
Hmm.
Like it looks very like post.
Or too
it looks post. It looks
right.
It looks post TNG to me. Yeah. That ship.
I still love it.
No, it's cool.
I'd be happy if
cool.
was the Discovery. To be honest.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So that's intriguing. That ship. We don't know what that ship is or anything else.
You know, it does really have an Enterprise vibe, though. So I could see that.
Yeah, it does.
Some saying that it would fit in this era. So it does feel. It feels post TNG in terms of. Modern from a modern perspective, it looks post 1990s, mm-hmm. but it does look in terms of just the Star Trek timeline very similar to the NX class. So I could see this being a ship of that era, convincingly because of Enterprise.
Now, if they're tending on following more of an Enterprise aesthetic. Could that have been a reason why they did so much with Enterprise stuff on Star Trek Beyond? Could there have been some kind of conscious coordination there to say, we're going to try to resurrect a lot of the imagery from this part of the franchise, which chronologically is the most recent? Or do you think that's just a coincidence?
It's probably a coincidence.
That's a good question, though. I have no idea.
Mm. Yeah. I assume we'll find out one way or the other soon enough.
Yeah. I really did enjoy how much Enterprise stuff they did for Beyond, and it made me feel kind of guilty how unfamiliar I am with that series.
Yeah, I need to dig into that show again.
I wouldn't be opposed to doing a rewatch.
Maybe we could do like a podcast where like we rewatch it season by season.
Sure.
And then like comment on
it like a series four episodes.
Where we yeah, that season. Could be fun.
Yeah,
I'd be totally into
maybe
that.
And then that would be, and we could get our beloved listeners to watch along with us as well, and that would all be prep for this.
Yeah, because poor Enterprise, it's like the redheaded stepchild.
Yeah.
But it's not a bad show. It's a great show.
No, it's not
at all.
No, I know.
It gets a bad rap.
I agree. It's true. It's funny how opinions sometimes turn around on certain projects as time goes on.
Yeah.
You know, how sometimes like expectation gets removed and you can just judge these things on their own merits. And like sometimes that allows you to see them a little clearer.
For sure.
And then by the same token, there's some things that make a splash when they're there and then just kind of disappear.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep, absolutely.
I mean, I was thinking about that after we did... Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say?
I said the one-hit wonder syndrome.
One-hit wonder syndrome. Yep. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
Anyway, it'll be exciting to see what direction they go in with that ship.
Speaking of things that are controversial and ships, I think we should talk about the Discovery.
Okay, yes, we should. So it appears, based on the storyboards that you see in the trailer, that they are definitely using the 70s design that Ken Adam and Ralph McQuarrie put together for, I believe, the Planet of the Titans project, mm-hmm. which would have featured the original cast. The Discovery design is based on what the Enterprise was going to look like had Planet of the Titans had gone forward or something. I personally like the design. I think it's a little different. It's a little retro. I kind of dig it. A lot of people did not care for it. Yeah. And are probably not too thrilled to see that it's remaining intact and that they're going forward with it. I like it myself. What do you guys think?
I can dig it. I'm not in love with it, but I definitely don't hate it. I think it's cool, and yeah. I think the history behind it is super cool.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it's not every day you get ships designed by like Ken Adam, who is like this Academy Award-winning production designer, and you know Ralph McQuarrie is Mr. Star Wars.
Yeah.
Mr. Star Wars.
Hard to argue with his expertise. I mean, and that's what so much of Rogue One and The Force Awakens was trying to resurrect as much of his stuff as they could.
Yeah. So, what do you think of it, Jared? What are your thoughts?
So my reaction is I'm not a fan of the curves and the sharp edges. I think just the curves work better, right? That's something that the ships have always done to look a little less militant, a little less scary, is to be rounded rather than sharp.
Interesting.
So that's what I prefer. I think honestly, that looks a little bit more like a Klingon ship, like because
I was going to say Romulan,
it's more like the D7
TOS Romulan, or Romulan Warbird, or the Klingon ship. Because it's got that, it's very long, and it's got broad, whatever you call the things that attach to the nacelles.
Yeah, I've been calling that the drive section. I don't know if that's the right term, though.
Yeah, probably. But those, but not even just the, not even the drive section, but, like, the wings that attach to the actual, like, they're, like, the sticks that go over to the nacelles to hold the nacelles on. Those guys are, broad and flat. They look more aerodynamic. So they reminded me of, the Bird of Prey.
Anyway, I'm intrigued by it. Hopefully people will warm up to it since it is going to be our ship for a while.
Yes, it will.
And speaking of our ship, we got to see what maybe is the bridge.
We did.
Well, we got to see the construction of Seth. Sure.
Yeah.
The very time lapse. Yeah, there's a time lapse. And there's several shots. And we threw them all in that article. But you can see them building... what looks to be maybe the bridge with the turbo lift outside of it. Mm-hmm. You can see a big round thing being constructed out of plywood and some interesting curves and something that looks like a big area where you'd have the ability to have a lot of different people kind of gathered in one space. So that might be the bridge.
Very likely. Whenever you see like an oval thing like that, that's usually a dead giveaway.
Mm-hmm. It's got these kind of curves, almost like ribs going over the top of it. Mm-hmm. That was super, that like got me stoked when I saw, that might have been the thing in the video that got me the most pumped was seeing the time lapse of them building it. Because I'm like, it's real, it exists, they're filming on it.
Yeah, I know, it's exciting. It makes it all feel real.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Because casting rumors don't mean anywhere near as much to me as actual sets, right? That shows commitment.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay, can we talk a little?
Some of those sets they were building looked gigantic.
Yeah, they did.
So I don't know if they're just for the pilot or if that's part of the ship or whatever, but there's some big sets we're going to see on the show.
But I mean, is there even a pilot? Because it's been... they've already paid for the season, right?
Yeah, I mean, premiere. Okay. Maybe I'm probably misspeaking.
But I mean, if they're going
to
big,
just used to
if they're going to build a big thing, big sets for the premiere, you'd think they'd keep trying to use them.
Sure, that's part of the idea.
Yeah, it's It's probably possible. I'm just saying what we've seen, though. We've seen some big sets. Mm-hmm. So,
well, we,
much bigger than we've ever seen for a Star Trek television program.
We know
before.
That they put some big money into this show. We're talking like Game of Thrones level money.
Wow.
Yeah. So, yep. There's a, you know, they're not fooling around. Look, if they want Star Trek to be an ongoing thing that's going to have a future ahead of it, they've got to be really serious about doing this right. So, and they are so far, it appears. I mean, there's been some bumps in the road, as we all know, but it seems like they've course corrected a little bit.
Do we have a release date? I feel embarrassed that I'm asking that, but do we know when the episode that's not unusual that I don't know that.
No, it's not. No. But there's been a lot of confusion about it because they've pushed it back a few times now.
Yeah.
And the latest pushback, they didn't give us another date to shoot for. They just said, well, we're not going to make May. So, you know, who knows? They basically, there was a couple of interviews, I think, with some people who are, you know, bigwigs at CBS saying, you know, oh, this is just great news because it means we, you know, the show comes out when it's ready rather than on a deadline, on a schedule. And, you know, on the one hand, honestly, I do see the validity to that, but it also seems like they're a little bit of a cover-up, like play this like it's a good thing, don't let anyone realize that we just fell way behind schedule.
Well, they were supposed to start shooting at the end of September, beginning of October.
I mean, and they just started filming.
So I'm telling you, we've discussed this before.
We have.
At some point, the book that's going to come out about all the intrigue that went on over the past year is going to be a page turner and a half.
I didn't think about that.
All the palace intrigue.
I have to admit, it's been hard for me to get over Brian Fuller leaving.
Yeah, it definitely took a little bit of a sheen off of the production.
And maybe leaving is the wrong word. Being pushed out.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's pretty safe to say at this point Brian got fired.
Yeah. That whole thing smells bad, though.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. It also doesn't speak well, you know, well, we're specifically speaking about the production timeline. It kind of reminds me a little bit of what happened with the Hobbit movies, where Guillermo del Toro had been on deck to be the director, and he was going to do everything. There was a conflict between the Tolkien estate and New Line, and so they weren't able to film on schedule for the other movies that Guillermo had committed to, and so he had to leave, and then Peter Jackson came in at kind of the last minute and had to start over, and so instead of having as much time to prepare as the preceding director would have, he had to basically start from scratch right when they had to go, and so the production ultimately suffered a lot because of that. And so this is different, where, you know, that was, I mean, you know, Guillermo del Toro didn't get fired. But it just kind of reminds me of that, and it makes me a little worried because I obviously don't want Discovery to be as challenged as The Hobbit was.
Yeah.
But it seems like they're, they needed more time and they took it. So, I mean, we should take that as a good thing then.
Absolutely. No, I actually don't feel, while I can be a little cynical about it and say things like, I'll believe it when I see it, I don't feel terrible about them taking the time to do it rather than trying to meet an artificial deadline.
I think calling the deadline in the first place was jumping the gun.
Yeah, I think a lot of that may have just been, you know, because it was the 50th and they needed to say something.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, it takes a lot, you know, to make a sci-fi series is not like making a standard television show. And people know that. But I think the collective knowledge of what it takes to make Star Trek is gone. You know, because the last time we made a Star Trek show was Enterprise. And then, you know, when that ended, the people who were working on it moved on. The people who knew how to make the gears turn behind the scenes and how to make these kinds of shows happen are gone. You know, they're often doing other things. So there was this gap in time. And so they're in a lot of ways starting from scratch.
Well, it was also being produced by another company at the time. Paramount was producing Star Trek in those days.
Oh, right. Paramount, Viacom, whole thing.
Yeah, there's literally no corporate memory at CBS about how to make a Star Trek show.
Yeah, so not since really, the 60s, I guess, then, right? Or even
no,
at
ever.
All. Yeah.
CBS has never had Star Trek before on television, so they're learning as they go, and I think they had a few, I think they were kind of surprised at the amount of money and preparation
time
that's required to create a Star Trek show. They're used to their procedurals and all the other stuff that they're known for at CBS. And Star Trek is nothing like that. So
no, it's not a procedural at all.
Definitely a learning curve going on over at the Tiffany Network.
The Tiffany Network?
That's what CBS is called, the Tiffany Network.
Oh, okay. Well, there you go.
Anyway, moving on. The last shot in the entire trailer with a lens flare in it.
And not, I haven't seen a single mention of that.
Yeah, really?
I haven't. Yeah, have I just missed it?
I prefer to think of it as either someone going to warp or a Q flash. So I'm going to think of it as a Q flash.
Okay, we'll go with that.
But you're right. It is lens flary.
Yes, it most definitely is. Anyway, it appears to be the captain's chair. It may be the captain's chair of the Discovery. It may be the captain's chair of
the Xin Zhao.
The Xin Zhao, or it could be what I think it is, which is the captain's chair of the Klingon ship, because that thing does not look comfortable.
Yeah, that does not look like an enlightened Federation teal organization type of chair. That's a little bit too throne-ish.
It's not ergonomic. Yeah,
It looks nothing like Kirk's lazy Susan.
No.
So I don't know. What do you guys? I mean, it looked like semi cool kind of a design.
I just thought it looks like. I just thought it has to be the captain's chair. The way they put so much fanfare over it with the lens flare and all that at the end, and it was like dun dun. You know, it's like my God.
It probably is.
That's the captain's chair.
It probably is, but I hope like they like maybe showed it before, like they put some cushions on it, because to have to sit on that thing would look very uncomfortable.
Yeah, to come to think of it, Kirk's chair was like a big lazy boy, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, yeah, lazy boy.
Yeah, right? Jerry
Susan, whatever they call him.
Jerry Seinfeld had this bit where he said, that's why Star Trek is the ultimate male fantasy, because you're just flying through space in this big comfortable chair with a big screen TV.
It's true.
Come over Thursday night, Klingon boxing. Some days I miss the 90s.
Yeah, that was good.
I miss the 90s every day.
Yeah. Okay, do we want to talk about some of the casting announcement news that we have?
Yeah.
Go for it.
Okay, and we were talking about this before we hit record, but we want to talk about the guy who's been cast as Sarek.
Mm-hmm.
James Frayn, I don't really recognize him. I don't know if I've seen him in anything. He's been in Orphan Black, Agent Carter, and Gotham, which...
Yeah. Three very popular shows.
I know.
And 24. He was on 24.
Oh, he was on 24.
Well.
Oh, okay. I probably saw some of that. He's British,
uh-huh.
Right? Yep. And he kind of... He looks like Mark Leonard. Or Leonard,
looks,
I would say it wrong.
Mark Leonard,
he looks
yeah.
a heck of a lot like Sarek. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he'll be playing Sarek. Yeah.
Very well
yeah,
cast.
He definitely could be... Yeah, he could definitely pass as Mark Leonard's son.
Okay, so I've got to get this out of the way now. Is it Sarek or Sarek?
I've heard it go both ways. On screen, I've heard it go both ways.
So what do you think... How do you think they'll pronounce it on Discovery? I mean, I guess it's kind of up to the actors.
It kind of is, yeah.
I think they'll say
Sarek. Although maybe now they'll... Yeah,
I've always heard Sarek. Or at least that's the name in my head. But maybe it's because... I feel like in TNG, it's Sarek pretty firmly.
Yeah, that's how Patrick Stewart said it. So that's
So maybe that's probably where I would have heard it more, being like a TNG baby. So I'm probably used to hearing Sarek.
Yeah, I mean, it was done both ways, I think, maybe during the series or something like that. I mean, even McCoy like mangles it at one point and calls him like Sarek or something like that.
I hate when they do that.
Yeah. Although that could be just McCoy being McCoy.
Oh, that's true. I always try to imagine that. But you know it's not. You know it's just the actor.
we can make that our headcanon.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's also like Harry Mudd uses the term Vulcanian instead of Vulcan.
Mm.
Yeah, but that was at the beginning of the show. Sure. Even Spock refers to himself as a Vulcanian.
Yeah,
at one point.
Or there's...
It was before, like, they didn't have all the nomenclature down yet.
I'm going to believe that this show Bible for Discovery will be a little bit more thorough than the show Bible was for the original series.
I would hope so.
And that was pretty thorough, actually, for the
really?
Time.
I'm sure.
But yeah.
I'm sure it was.
For that era? Oh, absolutely.
Wow. I guess I didn't even think of them having a show Bible, but of course they would. They would have to lay out all the themes and the places and the people.
Oh, yeah. The original series show Bible was a big solo run on the convention circuit for a long time.
That'd be cool. I'd love to see that.
Yeah. That one and the TNG Bible, which came out, which got snuck out months before the show went on the air. I read that Bible like at least 2 months before TNG went on
the air. So you already knew all the characters and everything that would be in it?
Yeah, although there had already been disclosures about the characters.
Okay.
I mean, we're getting off topic a little bit, but like David Gerald was doing a feature in Starlog when they were in pre-production on the show, and he would describe who characters were going to be, and like you kind of saw them evolve. Like at one point, Picard was Julian Picard, I think, and then it became Jean-Luc Picard. And I think you got to see Data evolve a little bit. Like, you know, he describes how that all worked out and stuff like that.
Super cool.
So there wasn't, it wasn't like a complete wall of silence like there is now.
Right.
Where there's like we know virtually nothing.
Well, like, do you guys have any insight as to why that has changed?
The internet.
Yeah.
But I mean, why is it more silent now?
I think they've just become very spoiler averse because they just don't want the whole project getting blown and getting prejudged before they can get it out.
I guess they figure back in the day, if things got out, only a select group of people would ever see it.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Because the distribution channels were so minor.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Today, if it gets out, it's spoiled it for everyone.
Sure. Yeah. It's on the front page of Reddit. All these nerds with YouTube channels do stuff about it. And then, you know.
Stuff used to leak out, guys. I mean, I read the Generation script, I think, in June of 94.
Hmm. Oh, you did?
I did. I mean, I already knew it was a turkey.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I read that script. I was like, oh, man.
Man,
when I heard they were doing reshoots, I knew exactly what they were reshooting. Because Kirk's death was so bad on paper, like I was like, they've got to be reshooting the ending.
And oh, sure enough, it was even worse.
He got shot in the back.
Oh boy,
and died.
What were they thinking?
It's on the Blu-ray. You can see.
Oh, and then there was like the bungee jumping thing where he like does the drop from orbit.
Space skydiving.
Yeah.
Space skydiving with Chekhov and Scotty.
Oh, yeah. That looked so dumb.
Which they ended up doing in Star Trek 2009, orbital skydiving.
Okay, but I think it looked cool when they did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because they had a little bit more.
Right. Not like old man Shatner.
Yeah, landing in a field with a parachute. Rather, it was them in that cool Australian red shirt.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, I think they've just gotten much more paranoid over the years.
Yeah, they just have to.
I mean, leaks on Star Trek sets were always a problem, but.
So my dream job, if I could ever figure out a way to have this, would be a misinformation campaign for productions like this, where I produce phony leaks to confuse people.
I love it.
I don't know how I could get that job, but I think that would be fun.
I think they should hire you right now.
Thank you. Thank you, Kayla. I appreciate your support. I'm sorry. While we're talking about Sarek, without really talking about Sarek, the one thing I want to say is when the timeline came out, I think we all kind of did like some tabulations for which characters from pre-existing franchises could come back who would still be alive at that time. And, you know, you think of the ones from, you know, the Cage or whatever, they're the most logical ones. And then I thought of like the, you know, whoever from Enterprise who might still be alive, you know, like we could have a really old version of Dr. Phlox or whatever. Mm-hmm. The one I also thought of was the Dax symbiont would have still been alive at this time. So maybe we'll see that. Yeah. I was embarrassed when I saw this because I realized, I didn't think about Sarek. Of course Sarek would be around. So
You know what?
Yep.
I'm sorry.
No, go ahead.
The Dax symbiont at this time in Star Trek's history was probably having that relationship with McCoy.
With Bones. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah. The Emeny Dax, I think, is the one who would have been alive at this time.
Yep.
That would be cool to see. Yeah. I would love that.
He had the hands of a surgeon. Yeah,
and then she does the little thing with her eyebrows.
Yep. that was a cute moment.
Yeah, Terry Farrell did adorable pretty well. Okay, are there any other characters or casting items that we want to talk about?
Well, there were two.
Do we want to talk about Malik Pancholi?
Yes, let's.
Okay.
There were two rumors, Malik being one of them. Well, yes, Malik being one of them. So we got a video taken by Chris Obi, who has been confirmed to be cast as a lead Klingon Discovery. He took a video of himself riding along in a car with some of his buddies. One of them was Malik Pencholi, and he refers to him in the video as Malik. So we're pretty sure that it's him. And he's like, hey, we're just driving to this super secret thing. We're going to work. What is this crazy thing that we're working on? And everyone's just like, oh, we don't know. We can't say what we're doing. And so we know that Chris, the videographer of this video, is definitely cast in Discovery and that it's a secret. And so we're wondering if these other people, including Malik Pencholi, are also cast in Discovery.
Mm, which seems plausible.
It does.
It does.
And they're all totally in Toronto, I believe, when the video was taken.
Uh-huh. Hmm. It's all fitting together. Mm-hmm.
And he's tweeted, so with it, he tweeted the video, and the text he wrote of the tweet says, just when you thought you knew what job you did and who you were, the saga continues with an ever-growing cast. And then he mentioned at Star Trek CBS.
There you go.
So. Seems like a
but it hasn't been officially
announced. Has not been officially announced, but it seems like a pretty strong rumor that Malik Pencholi would be in it. And the other rumor is actress Emily Kutz, who has recently appeared on the IMDb of the Star Trek Discovery page as a con officer.
Yeah.
And she is based in Toronto. So it seems plausible.
Very cool.
Thing is, you know, I look at that and we have a great big publicity photo of her. But I see Discovery's first red shirt. That's what I see right there.
Aww.
She's got one episode listed. She doesn't have a name.
It's she true. Is she a, doesn't have a name. Oh, no.
She is a dead con officer walking.
She doesn't have a name.
Yeah, she's screwed.
Yeah.
She's Ensign Hawk.
Yes, she
is. Mr. Hawk, you, the new cast member.
If her name is Ensign Hawk, I will be very happy.
Wouldn't that be fantastic?
That would
please,
be.
Please, if this, people writing Discovery are listening, put a red shirt in named Ensign Hawk and we'll all be very happy.
Please, please.
There'll definitely be a few red shirts. I mean,
there has to be. Trek.
And okay, so what do we think about, I haven't thought about this before. I assume I know the answer, but the colors of the shirts. We think it's going to be the classic gold is command, red is engineering and security, and blue is science and medical. Or will they change it up?
Okay, so while I think the kind of flashy, over-the-top idea of having uniforms that are completely different colors based on your job are awesome for the 60s, as I've been rewatching TNG episodes lately, I think the aesthetic doesn't extend past, you know, that kind of crazy in your face over the top fashion era. And so I hope that they don't do that. I like it better when the first contact uniforms where they just make the collar the different color. And so I hope they do something like that where they keep it going, but they show a little bit of restraint. Maybe you guys disagree, but that's what I hope they do.
Well, the reason that there were so many different colors in the 60s is because RCA owned NBC. And RCA was trying to move as many color televisions as they possibly could.
Broadcast in color.
Yeah.
Which is why, right, this program is brought to you in living color on NBC. Yeah, that's what it is, yeah. On NBC. And so that's why, especially during the first season of the show, there is color everywhere. Like, they had color gels everywhere. Like, there's color where color shouldn't even be. On the Enterprise, and like
that color shouldn't be
no, you know what I mean. Yeah, it's just like you see splashes of color in weird spots. Yeah.
Like, why is that? Why is there a pink light in the background? We don't know.
Or giant green space hands,
right?
I need to mention, as this is our 31st episode, this is our Who Mourns for Adonis episode. So I had to make a space hand reference.
Very cool. Anyway, that was the reason for that. And I don't think they should obviously carry that complete aesthetic into the new show. But I do think that they might still keep the colors somewhere on the uniform to denote the division.
I think the uniform should have color.
Yeah, I don't think the TNG uniforms to me were just gray jumpsuits. Not the first contact outfits. I don't particularly like them.
The ones that they had for the whole TNG run?
No, the first contact.
Oh, you don't like the first contact ones?
Not particularly.
Oh, I like the first Contact ones.
To me, it's just everybody's like kind of wearing like a charcoal gray thing, and it's just, I don't know.
Well, I guess it when they all wear the same thing, it makes it feel more military to me. Like they're all wearing this military uniform, and they all have to look the same. I liked having them have different colors to show.
It's almost like you have a little visual variety.
Yeah, visual variety, a little maybe a little pride for your job. Like I'm on the engineering team.
Yeah. So maybe they we'll get an aesthetic that's like somewhere between the original series and TNG. You
know? Yeah, which it's probably what they'll go for.
Yeah, and you know, while we're talking about the original series and TNG, there's been people complaining in the comment threads about why this show, like this franchise, seems to be so fixated on the original series, and you know, like putting the show in that era or whatever. And this show is either, I mean, this show is designed to basically launch an entire online network for CBS.
Sort of the way Voyager was supposed to launch UPN.
Don't bring that up.
Sorry.
But they're going to try. They're gonna, you know, they want this to succeed, so they're not gonna take a terrific amount of chances with it. And CBS looks at their data and sees that the two things that sell in the Star Trek franchise are the original Star Trek series and Star Trek The Next Generation. So this show is either going to be TOS-centric or TNG-centric. It was going to be one or the other. Now, maybe over time, when if this show is a hit and establishes itself, they may be more willing to take a risk. Like, TNG did so well in its latter years that they felt emboldened enough to go out and make Deep Space Nine. Mm-hmm. So maybe this will be the safety show, and then maybe later on they'll do something a little more daring.
But, you know what even I mean? Saying, I think that's probably all true, and that's really good insight. But I think they are taking some risks, too, just like looking at the amount of money that they're dumping into this thing. That I think there is, I guess they're taking risks in certain areas and maybe not in others. So you're saying, yeah, maybe in terms of the storyline and then the timeline, blah, 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 they're taking less risks. But I think it's because, maybe this is just another way of saying what you already said, the reason they're being risk averse in that area is because they're being high risk in other areas. Like, dumping a ton amount of money into the show to begin with.
Yeah. So, anyway, that was my speculation.
No, I think that's probably true. It makes a lot of sense to me.
It seems it's a theory based on facts.
Ah, I like that. All right, well, I think we have kind of covered it as much as I think we possibly can right now. Hopefully we'll get more information soon so we can continue to chew on this stuff. I'm looking forward to that.
Same.
And do we have any Trek anecdotes today? Or?
Oh, yeah, I have one. Or Kayla, did you have something you wanted to say first?
Yeah, before you get into your Trek anecdote, I just wanted to mention we had an awesome comment from a listener, thank you very much, on Twitter, who has a topic suggestion for us for a future episode, which I think was a great idea. He said, what's been y'all favorite Star Trek merchandise from 50 years, and what do you hope to see from Discovery merch?
That's so good.
I thought that was a great question.
Yeah, that's really good. Thank you for that.
And I just can't wait to talk about the Spock helmet with the big light on top of it that says Spock on the front of it.
We won't get into it now, but the early Star Trek merchandise had very little to do actually with Star Trek.
Yeah, it did.
But that's for another day. Thank you for that suggestion. That's an awesome, awesome idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good idea.
And Jared, did you have a Trek anecdote to share with us
today? I do. Okay, so I've been sitting on this one for a while. So there is, and you guys, of course, are familiar with the episode, the Naked Time, right? And the character, the Kevin O'Reilly, I think his name is.
Kevin Riley.
Riley, yeah. And, you know, he takes over the engineering and he says, have no fear, O'Reilly's here, right? In this thick accent when he's, you know, affected by the Psi 2000 virus. Okay, so I have an Irish colleague and his first name is, I don't necessarily identify him. But every time I see him, I want to say, have no fear, O'Reilly's here, right? And I know he wouldn't get it, but that's all I can think of when I see him.
You're just silently laughing to yourself every time he walks in the room.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe someday I'll explain to him. I don't think he'd appreciate it, though, but I just can't help, he's a great minor character. Someday we're going to do an episode about minor characters on Star Trek, and Riley is one of my favorites.
Yeah, me too. I always liked that character. I was always sad that they never brought him back more.
Yeah, he's only on two episodes.
Yeah. he like everybody instantly took to him. Like and Bruce Hyde, who the actor who played him, was on the convention circuit right up till he died.
Oh wow!
Like he was very right. He was very you know fairly popular. So it's a shame he maybe bring him back in a movie or something, but they never did.
Well, maybe you know, we still have Star Trek being made today. They can always do some kind of a nod to the character, mentioning his name or something.
Yeah. Yeah, maybe we'll see Kevin Riley in Discovery. It's possible. Who knows? All right, well, I think we're going to wrap it up, gang. Thank you for listening. Once again, this is Brian, Kayla, and Jared, and we'll see you guys soon.
Take care.
Thanks a lot, guys.